Through 25 seasons, 4,561 episodes, I believe The Oprah Winfrey Show was one of the greatest classrooms in the world.
I really never thought of it that way.
The aha moments, the breakthroughs, the LOLs, the connections, the occasional ugly cry.
I miss him so terribly. I miss him every single minute.
The moments that mattered. The eye-opening life lessons.
Never allow them to take you somewhere else.
I'm bringing them back. It's time to open the vault. I've personally chosen these classic episodes to share with you again.
Every single person you ever will meet shares that common desire. They want to know, do you see me? Do you hear me? Does what I say mean anything to you?
You are listening to The Oprah Winfrey Show, the podcast.
It is the story that has been on all of our minds. Last week, 13-year-old Ben Ownby was reportedly abducted just outside St. Louis, minutes after getting off of the school bus. 4 days later, detectives tracked Ben down to the apartment of a local pizza parlor manager. He was 41-year-old Michael Devlin. In a shocking twist, not only did police find Ben, they also discovered 15-year-old Sean Hornbeck, another Missouri boy who had vanished 4 years ago. I sat down with Sean Hornbeck and his family in their very first interview since this incredible miracle story broke. We began with Sean's parents and his aunt. Can you take us back to the day, if you will, October 6, 2002? How did you first know that he was missing, that he was gone?
When he was supposed to be home at 5 o'clock, and of course, Sean always ran just a little late, so we always gave him a little leeway as far as
he was 11 years old at the time.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the closer it got to 5:30, quarter to six, I just had this gut feeling in my stomach. I turned around to my husband, and I told him, I said, Sean's not home. I said, and something's wrong.
And so when she said something's wrong, Craig, did you all immediately jump into action?
That was when we jumped in the car and went to, you know, different places where he might have been, went to where we thought that he was supposed to have been earlier in the day. They said that they hadn't seen him. So then we come back home and get out the phone list and start making phone calls.
Was he supposed to be going to a game?
He was supposed to have been going to a friend's house.
Okay, that's when the nightmare started.
That's when it really started to sink in. Mm-hmm.
From speaking with Sean, what do you now believe happened on that day, October 6, 2002?
We still have not had the opportunity to speak to Sean about that day or the 4.5 years since then. Mm-hmm. The time is going to come. We have told him that when he's ready, he will speak to us. He will come to us. Of course, we are going to be all getting into therapy because I believe that needs to start right away. But
what if he never wants to come to talk about it? What if he feels that I never want to talk about it, that was the past? And
then that's something I'm going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Because don't you want to know?
Yes, I do. I definitely do want to know. I want to know as much details as possible, as much as I can bear to know. Mm-hmm. But as far as that day, I believe he will talk to us eventually about it.
Pam, that's a very interesting word you use, as much as I can bear. Do you sense, perhaps, that he feels that whatever has happened is not something he wants to share because he doesn't think you can bear it?
Yes.
You do feel that?
Yes, I do.
You do? Mm-hmm. And you're shaking your head, nodding, Sherry, because, as his aunt?
He has said he doesn't want to see the sadness in his mother's eyes anymore. Mm. And his father, he wants to give them some peace. Mm. And he just wants to see him smile more. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, have you thought of, obviously, you've thought about this, what kept him from escaping? You know, there are all these theories now, and you hear commentators on television talking about why he didn't, theories about why he didn't. What do you ask, and what is the answer for yourself of why he didn't escape?
Eventually, I will ask Sean that, but I honestly and truly, in my heart, feel that in some way or another, he had to have felt either he was going to be threatened or his sisters or myself or his dad. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe if the alleged person would have said, you can leave at any given time, there would be no recourses, everything would be just fine, Sean would have came home in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I honestly feel that he felt like he could because of somebody's safety, whose I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you believe, Craig?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there has to be something being held over his head, mm-hmm. something somehow to keep him from, you know, from trying to leave, from trying to get away. There's no way in the world that if he was able to do whatever he wanted to do and could have walked away at any moment, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely something that stopped that from happening.
Tell us how you got the call that the police had found your son. How did that happen?
We were on our way home from work, and we was driving down the highway. Both of our cell phones go to ringing, and it happened to be the prosecuting attorney's office. And we had missed the phone, and actually, or missed the call, and it went to voicemail. And when I listened to my voicemail and knew it was prosecuting attorney John Roop, when he says, "Pam, please call me back immediately," of course, first thing, you know, popped in my mind is, okay, oh my God, what news does he have? Because I knew he had to have had some news to be calling me.
Mm-hmm. Did you think maybe he was calling to tell you that they found the body of your son?
That was in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. I definitely had thought of that, you know. And then I had told myself, you know, you can't think of that yet. We don't know.
And he tells you what?
When I heard Craig say, just a few minutes, I'll have to find somewhere to pull over. Well, when he said that, it was like the world just stopped. It was like, okay, why is he having us pull over? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. what news that he has us that we have to pull over for? Mm-hmm. And it took us a few minutes to pull over, so it seemed like it was forever.
And did you at that time think it was the worst news?
I did. Mm-hmm. And then we got pulled over, and Craig was talking to him. And then I heard Craig say, he's alive.
Oh, my goodness.
And when I heard that, that was the last thing I had heard. I'm sorry. It was just the most wonderful news we got.
Yeah. I can just imagine. I can just imagine. So tell me what it was like when you first saw your son's face. Who then saw him first? Did you see him together?
We went in the room together. Uh-huh. I think I did go in the room. I did go in the room first. Mm-hmm. And Sean immediately stood up. And I had no doubt in my mind. I mean, because Craig did make the comment to me. You know, it has been 4.5 years. He says, Pam, you know, how are we going to know? And then he looked right at me and he says, you're going to know. And I said, yeah, I'll know. I'll know immediately I walk in that door. So as soon as we got in that door and he stood up, I said, oh, my God, it's my son. And I love you. And we knew right then.
You knew it.
I knew it. Even 4.5 years later, and as much as he has changed, mm-hmm. I knew it.
So when you saw him, the first thing you said to him was, I love you?
I love you, and you're home.
And you're home. What did he say?
He says, it's glad to be home.
He said, glad to be home. Mm-hmm. How has he changed? Aside from 11 to 15, obviously, mm-hmm. how has he changed, the boy that you knew at 11?
It's definitely not the little boy that I had at 11. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of adjustments, and we just won't let him out of our sight. He's not quite understanding that yet. I can tell that there is a lot on his mind. Mm-hmm. I can tell that I think he will eventually talk to us mm-hmm. and that he wants to, but there's still this distance mm-hmm. between us, not like it was.
His innocence is gone. I mean, he lost his innocence from the time he was 11 till he was 15. Mm-hmm. You know, the most formative years that you could have with your child, and mm-hmm. they've lost that.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go there and ask you, what do you think happened to him? Do you think he was sexually abused?
Yes.
Do you think he was tortured?
That I don't know yet.
Well, you know, there's more than one kind of torture. There's mm-hmm. mental torture and there's mm-hmm. physical torture. I have no doubt that, you know, mentally that he's not the same boy that he was. Mm-hmm. You know, physically we don't see any signs of, you know, anything, but, you know, that's 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say.
Have you been talking to therapists or ministers or anybody trying to help you all figure out how to continue on your way as a family?
We're actually in the process of going through the therapy and things like that. We've not actually talked to anyone yet other mm-hmm. than a few people from Child Advocate Center did talk to us and gave us some advice.
And was the advice not to ask him?
Yes.
About the 4 years?
Yes. We were asked or advised not to ask him any questions. Let him talk to us.
Why do they say they don't want you to do that?
When all this stuff comes out, we need professionals there that know how to deal with that specific circumstance. When we find out whatever that circumstance is, you know, there's the last thing we want to do is put him through any more mental anguish.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because the public wants to know. The public wants to know. But just sitting here with you as parents and family members, I can imagine that the most important thing to you is his well-being.
Correct.
But you also want to know.
Well, certainly we want to know, and, you know, the world wants to know. But that's not the important thing. That's insignificant. The important thing is Sean is back home. The important thing is we can give a message of hope to other families that have missing children. And we can also, once again, reiterate the messages about keeping your children safe and not letting them travel by themselves.
Do you believe now, having gone through this, that a child in this country is not safe riding their bicycle?
There's no way. No, no child is safe anywhere.
On the street where they live.
Well, I mean, and if you look at Ben Owenby, I mean, he was almost to his house. He got off the bus. He was almost
500
home.
500 feet away, I hear.
Right there. I mean, it does happen that close, that quick. If they were just very fortunate, we were all very fortunate that someone saw something and stepped up to the plate and reported it. If that hadn't happened, it could be a completely different story right now.
In his first interview since the rescue, I sat down with Sean Hornbeck the other day, along with his family. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Hi. Hi again, Oprah. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Tell me, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling really good.
Feeling really good? Has all of this been, like, what to you?
It's been great for all of us, I'm sure. It's great to be back home, seeing familiar faces, new ones. It's been great for all of us.
Can you tell us about the, I just asked your father about what January 12th was like for him. What was it like for you when those police officers walked into the room?
When they brought Pam, Mom, and me in to see you for the first time?
It was surprising.
It was surprising?
Yes, I mean, they've changed, but I could recognize them in 20 more years instantly.
Really? I wanted to ask you, for the sake of all the parents out there who've told their children not to go with strangers, not to let strangers in the house. So you were 11 years old when you disappeared. Had your parents ever told you those things?
The whole entire don't get in cars with strangers and stuff like that, yes.
You've been told that?
Yes.
Did you ever, as a kid, think that something like this could happen to you? Even when your parents are telling you that, you're thinking what?
It's always a possibility in this day of age.
Yeah. So how often did you think about your family?
Every day.
Every day.
I prayed to God that one day I would be back with my family every night, and I crossed myself every night.
You crossed yourself every night?
Very Christian family.
Very Christian family. Did you ever try to write or call them?
No.
No. Did you have access to internet or phone?
Yes.
Did you have access to TV?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Did you have access to TV as such that you could see the stories about you being missing?
I could never watch it. I just started crying instantly. I never could watch news or anything. I still can't to this day.
Because seeing stories about yourself would upset yourself.
Just seeing stories about other missing kids would upset me because I've been there. It's just too sad.
Yeah. Did you have, like, because neighbors are saying that they saw you riding around on your bicycle in the parking lot or wherever, did you have some freedoms that you could be allowed to ride on the bicycle, or would you be watched the whole time, or?
I did have some freedoms, yes.
Did you have friends?
Yes.
Yeah. And what would you tell your friends? Where did your friends just think you just appeared from?
We just made a story and just kept the story the same.
Did any neighbors ever ask you why you weren't in school?
It was always homeschooled.
You were homeschooled?
No, that was the story.
That was the story?
About school. Mm-hmm.
Are you looking forward to going back to school?
Actually, yes.
Yeah. You thought you'd never find yourself saying that?
I don't think anyone ever would have.
Yeah. No. Did you think about being rescued? Did you think about being discovered, that the neighbors or somebody might recognize that you were...
I was hoping.
You were hoping. And so during this whole time, what would you do all day? Could you tell us that? Do you feel comfortable?
I would mostly sleep. It's the only way I could ever pass the time.
Sleeping?
This is basically what I did, sleep or watch TV or play video games. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how you got through these past 4 years?
Hope and praying.
Hope and praying. You said you would pray and cross yourself every night.
Yes.
And what would the prayer be?
That one day my parents would find me and I'd be reunited with them. Mm-hmm.
Is it true that you went to their internet site?
Yes.
And asked a question?
Yes.
What was the question?
I don't want to say it.
Okay. I had read in the paper that you had gone to the internet site and asked, how long will you be searching for your son? Yeah. And then you wrote another question saying, I would like to write a poem about your son. That's true? Yeah. What did you feel doing that? Was that a way to connect with them?
I was hoping it might give some kind of hint.
Do you all remember that at all, Craig? You do? Can you tell us about it, if anything? You remember getting that message?
I remember reading it. I remember thinking to myself, either this is someone with that name or this is someone trying to yank my chain.
And the name was Sean Devlin, correct?
Correct.
On your website?
Correct.
And the question was?
Well, how long are you going to look for your son? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we knew that the world knew the answer to that because we had been saying all along that we will never stop looking for our son. So I kind of found it strange. And, you know, you get so many of these messages. Mm-hmm. I mean, on a daily basis, you get so many weird out there messages.
Yeah. But were you struck by this one in any way?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't.
You were not?
I wish I had been.
Yeah. Were you hoping that they might have some suspicion or question? Were you hoping that you were giving the... Was it a cry for help or a cry to be noticed? Or...
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, in a way, yes. And so what do you want most now for yourself and your family?
To go back how we was. Just go back to school, work, spend time with each other, work on stuff, fix cars, because transmissions need it.
Uh-huh. Is it easy for you, difficult for you, strange, weird, being home again?
It's very comforting knowing that I'm back with my family, but then I've missed out on a lot of stuff. I missed out on Carson growing up, his first word, and walking and stuff like that.
And Carson is?
My oldest nephew. Mm-hmm.
So tell me, your parents both said, your parents and your aunt, they all said they never gave up on you. Did you think they had given up?
No.
You didn't think that they had given up? Did you ever give up?
There was a time when I was thinking about giving up, but then I just thought of what they was doing and searching for me and looking for me. And then I knew they wasn't giving up, so I figured I shouldn't.
Really? Because they kept their hope alive, you felt hopeful too? Because you knew they hadn't. Yeah.
I felt their hope and love.
Your parents were saying that they never, certainly, you know, since your disappearance, they've been working with other families who lost their children disappeared, and certainly they never would have hoped that somebody else would have a missing child. But Ben Onby going missing really made a difference in you being here today. Do you think that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would think if it wasn't for Ben, I might not be here right now. I might not be on the show. I might not be with my mom and dad right now.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what you thought when you first saw Ben?
Mm-hmm. Don't answer it.
Don't want to answer that? Okay. Can you tell us what you now feel about Ben?
I'm thankful mm-hmm. that he held in there for those couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry for what he went through. because I told myself a long time ago I never want any other kid to go through what I went through, because I knows what it's like. But I am thankful for him for holding in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that he's back with his family.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you'll be able to get back to a normal life?
At some point, yes. Mm-hmm. We're hoping soon, though.
Hoping sooner. Because, as you know, the whole country wants to know what happened, how this happened, and so forth. And your parents say that at some point, they're going to wait on you to tell them. Do you think you'll ever be ready to talk about it?
At some point, I'm sure I will be.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, we're just glad you're alive and well and still cute. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, audience, there are still so many questions that I know you want the answers to, I wanted the answers to, even his parents want the answers to. But in doing this interview, I agreed to respect certain boundaries and not ask questions about what went on during the four-year period and let them handle that between themselves and a therapist. One of the questions the whole country wants the answer to that I did not ask on camera of Sean because I wanted to respect those boundaries, but I did ask Sean privately, why did you not call or contact your parents? And he said to me he did not because he was terrified to do so. Sean Hornbeck is here today with his family. Sean, stand up so everyone can welcome you home. Great.
Fifteen-year-old Mitchell Holtz was one of the last people to see Ben Ownby last week before he disappeared near his home in Missouri.
Last Monday, me and Ben was on the bus, and Ben got off the bus first. Bus pulled up about 50 feet, let me out, and I seen a white Nissan pickup sideways in the road. It took off, and that's the last time I seen it. I never seen that vehicle, never, because every vehicle that comes down here, I noticed, and that truck I didn't. It didn't dawn on me that Ben would get in that truck. I knew something was wrong when Ben's dad called me and said that Ben was missing. I told him that I seen a white Nissan pickup. Then the sheriff came and he took my statement, and then they were looking for that white Nissan. I wish to see Ben really soon. I'm gonna say I love him and I'm gonna keep a good eye on him.
It was that tip from 15-year-old Mitchell Holtz that helped police find Sean and Ben. Officers Gary Wagster and Chris Nelson spotted that pickup truck on just a routine police call. And the rest, as we know, is history. They have never met Sean, nor Ben's families, and are honored to be here today. Come on out, guys. We're happy to have you here. Hello. Hello. Welcome. 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 Hello and welcome. Welcome, 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 welcome. We wanted to give you a hero's welcome.
Yeah, you did it.
Well, why were you at that apartment complex in the first place?
We were there to arrest somebody else, actually, and he wasn't home.
And he went home?
No, ma'am.
And so, what happened? Can you tell us the train of thinking or what happened?
We knocked on the guy's door that we were there to arrest.
Yeah.
And we were leaving. We were coming down some stairs. Gary looked at me and said, hey, you see that? And he pointed to the white pickup truck that we literally almost parked next to.
Really?
Yes. And then...
And what would you say, Gary?
I basically told Chris, I said, you see what I see? I said, that looks a lot like the truck on TV, and I can't really say what Chris said because it's national TV, it was ironic, you know? So we just started putting the pieces together on the statements. You know, that Mr. Holtz gave. I mean, that was astounding.
That pickup truck, the description.
That kid did it for everybody.
The kid did it. Mitchell did it.
Yes.
Yeah. Hooray for Mitchell. Hooray for Mitchell. So, again, I can't understand. Did you all speak to the Devlin guy? Did you all have a conversation?
We did a bunch of checks on the truck. We figured, hey, this is close enough. We need to find the owner of this truck.
Uh-huh.
So we start digging around. Chris went one way, I went the other way, and talked to a bunch of people. Come back, and this guy walks by us. And I'm like, well...
Devlin walks by you.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's throwing his trash out.
Throwing his trash out.
Yeah. That's it. Calm as can be.
Yeah. And so you struck up a conversation?
Exactly. I go up, I start talking to the dude. And he basically calm, cool, and collected. And I recognize him from working at Emo's, you know, because we frequent
the pizza place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We go there a lot, and real laid-back guy, and, you know, he was real laid-back at that time, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kept digging. I asked him, I said, is this your truck? He said, yeah, it's my truck. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, you know, this is where I'm going with this. And then that's where he got all squirrely on me. And yeah. I'm like, well, something you say no, right, you know?
He turned into
when
a
you
different...
say this is where I'm going with this, because you have to explain that, because those of us who aren't in your hometown, had that been a big story about
in your
local news about the truck?
We had a ton of calls on the on different trucks, and we've been checking a ton of white trucks throughout the week. Everybody had.
Okay.
And, you know, just, you know, I was going to, you know, he knew why I was there. He knew what I was
implying, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he got all squirrely on us, and
he just changed.
Yeah. So squirrely means what? Belligerent, angry?
Just real defensive.
Defensive.
And, you know,
okay.
For a guy that's laid back, and he got real defensive, started, you know, clenching his fist and,
really?
You know, darting his eyes, evasive. You know, when I was asking him questions, it's like, you know, I've never seen this guy before. Uh-huh. You know, this isn't the guy that works at Emo's.
Yeah.
So,
You became even more suspicious.
Exactly. Right.
So it's that little hunch thing,
The gut thing.
The gut thing.
The hair on the back of your neck.
Everybody's
got it. I mean, just not police officers, it's just the human part.
Yeah. Exactly. Is it true, I'd read reports, you don't know if what you read in the paper is true, that you had seen one of the boys in the window playing a video game or something?
Well, after we ran out of stuff to talk to Mr. Devlin about, and he just walked away, basically, we had already contacted the FBI, and they were on their way out.
Uh-huh.
And we looked through the front window, and there's like a little something cut out of the blinds, and we could actually see somebody playing on a video game. I mean, at the kitchen table.
It turned out later to be Sean.
Have you met Sean?
No, we haven't.
No.
There's Sean. Say hello to Sean. Craig, I know that you and Pam have dedicated your life since Sean was stolen from you. To helping other people who've lost their children. And so I was very careful in my interview with him yesterday at your recommendation and the recommendation of other authorities, because I didn't want to say anything that would affect the upcoming trial. But Sherry, I heard that you'd have a few things you wanted to say.
In 2003, he had friends that actually asked him if he was Sean Harnbeck. And if they had that suspicion, why didn't they just go to the police? Mm-hmm. If you have the suspicion of a missing child, and as in our community, as we, Craig and Pam had his face out in the media so many times, and you had a suspicion that he was Sean Harnbeck, get involved. Don't ignore it. It's that gut feeling again. Mm-hmm. If you had the gut feeling to ask, you knew.
Yeah.
If it would have came up with something, mm-hmm. that would have been the miracle we were looking for 3 years ago. If it wasn't, then you did the right thing.
And you all believe, as Sean has said to me, that he was terrified to answer that question, that he was terrified to answer if he was Sean Harnbeck and terrified to even contact you all.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is a miracle.
Yes, it is.
A miracle in Missouri. And we have part two of it. We'll be meeting Ben Onby's family. At the request of the FBI, we've been asked not to have the families together because they are a part of separate ongoing investigations. So I'm going to say thank you to Sean and Craig and Pam and Sherry and the rest of the family, the sisters, hello, for being here.
We're just ecstatic. Don't want to let him go or out of our sight. He doesn't want us to hold on to him, but we have.
Well, that was Ben Onby's parents just minutes after reuniting with their son last week. Don and Doris are also here with us today. And I understand you have not met the police officers.
No.
Yes. Yeah. Well, come on up here, guys, and say hello to the Onbys. Yeah.
Thank you, man.
I know, that's got to feel good.
Yes, I'm so grateful.
Grateful.
Yes.
That they just had that hunch.
Yeah.
That they had that hunch.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Ben is in the building, but his parents made a mom and dad decision and said that they feel that he's had enough stress from television. But I did just see him. He's in the green room on his computer playing a computer game he invented, okay? So can you tell us, you know, Ben is a straight-A student and Boy Scout, and had always let you know at all times where he was, and so how soon after he disappeared did you know he was missing?
Probably within a half an hour, we knew.
Yeah. Did you call that Mitchell?
Yes.
Because Mitchell lives near you all?
Right.
Mitchell is the boy who notified police that it was the a white Nissan truck, yeah.
I'd asked him about Ben, if he'd seen him get off the bus. And then he relayed the story about this white pickup being sideways in the road and driving erratically. And then from there, I called the sheriff's department.
Yeah. Did you know, because he wasn't home immediately, that something had gone wrong?
As soon as we checked all these places, yes, I knew there was something wrong.
And what did the officers tell you after he had been found? I mean, that's four agonizing days. Nobody knows what that feels like unless they've actually been through it, even though we've seen it on TV many times. Nobody really knows what that feels like.
No, it's just a ache in your heart that, you know, you just can't describe.
Yeah. And so when you found him, and there he was, all his body parts are there, all fingers and toes, everything. Yeah.
I just grabbed him and held on to him. I just didn't want to quit hugging him.
I think it's an interesting thing because you said the same thing that Pam said about Sean. We don't want to let him out of our sight. And now these are both teenage boys.
Yes. Yeah, well, I've already told him I'd like to go to school with him, and he didn't quite like that one at all.
Is he back in school yet?
No, not yet.
Will he be back in school soon? Will you let him go to school soon?
As soon as we talk to counselors and in the school.
Will you allow him to continue to ride the school bus?
We haven't thought past that yet.
Have you asked him what happened?
No.
No. Do you intend to ask him what happened?
Not directly, but as he opens up, you know, we might ask a question or so, but for the most part, we're just going to let him take
tell
his time.
Tell you or not tell you.
Right. Okay. I sat down with him the other day and told him that he could talk to us about it anytime he wanted to at his own time.
And he said?
He really didn't say anything. He just shook his head.
Okay. The question that everybody in the country was asking about Sean Hornbeck is the same question about Ben. Did you ask him, why didn't you call us?
No, we haven't explored any of that yet. We just want him to feel comfortable first.
Dr. Clint Van Zandt is a former FBI profiler, MSNBC analyst, and author of the book Facing Down Evil. And we just heard recently that he also was snatched for a brief time as a child.
Correct.
And you did not tell your mother until 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. I waited because I think, like many other kids, I had violated a cardinal rule. I was 7 years old. I was walking down the street to get a newspaper like I did every day, half a block away in the inner city. And, I mean, I was 57 years ago, and I remember seeing this guy come out of my peripheral vision. He came up and he said, hey, little boy, would you like to see some newborn puppies? Sure, yeah. I'd love to see that. Cardinal way to take a child.
Yeah.
I went with him. He took me through a couple of houses, back into a garage, slammed the door. I looked around, no way out. He demands that I perform a sexual act on him. I didn't know what he was talking about, Oprah.
Because you're seven, yeah.
Yeah, and he lunged at me. And as he came at me, whether he was drunk, dumb, or stupid, or a combination thereof, he missed. And I went around him. I hit the door. The door opened, thank God. I'm through the door. I ran and got the newspaper. I ran home. And I never told my parents. And the reason I didn't was because I'd violated a rule, and I thought I would get in trouble. And there I was at seven. I left that guy on the street to do that to another child.
Yeah.
And I never told anyone because I felt I was wrong, that I was the one who had done something wrong instead of him.
Well, do you understand, you know, everybody in the country, analysts are discussing whether this is one syndrome or another syndrome. Yeah. Do you understand why, then, you wouldn't call home?
Sure.
Why?
Why is the key word, because if we ask somebody why, that automatically makes them defensive. You know, you're going to hear analysts on television, myself included, that are going to get caught up in psychobabble. They're going to say Stockholm syndrome, identification with the aggressor, post-traumatic stress reaction.
Yeah.
You know, the bottom line is, if you're 11 or 13 and you've got a potentially 6'4", 300-pound aggressor, should this man turn out to be responsible for this. I mean, all of a sudden, he physically dominates you, and then he sets himself up to substitute himself for the two of you. I mean, I've got three children. We love them. We nourish them. We care for them. And all of a sudden, this mountain comes between us and our child and says, I will do these terrible things to you, to your family. We get all of these threats. I mean, these are things, if you want to talk about trauma, that's trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you do what you have to do to survive sometimes. And, you know, I guess I would say to the world, having been there as both a victim and an FBI agent investigating these, is, you know, we need to give these two kids some slack and let them have time to find themselves, let them create new memories. That's what you guys are doing. You're helping your son create new memories. I was gone 4 minutes. Your son was gone 4 days. Sean was gone 4 years. They each need to create new memories, but I've never seen stronger people than you've had today, Oprah, on your show.
And so, this is what's interesting, though. I was asking this of Sean's parents. Suppose he never wants to tell. You were only gone 4 minutes, abducted for 4 minutes. You waited 50 years to tell about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think part of it was there's an element of shame, there's an element of responsibility. I think that's the thing we need to teach our children. They can tell us anything.
So if you have an open relationship with your child and you say, you know, I know some horrible things must have happened to you, but we are your family, and you can tell us anything, and we will be there for you because we are your family. And no matter what happened, no matter what happened when you were abducted, it is not your fault.
You did. That's the key.
It
you
is
did
not
nothing
your fault.
Wrong.
You did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, what's wrong with saying that?
Oh, and you can.
Okay.
But I think you guys have. You said, whenever you're ready to talk, you can talk to me. But that's the thing. What we don't want to do is say, why? Why didn't you call? Why didn't you pick up the phone? I mean, why didn't you dial 911? Because he was traumatized, because he was frightened, because he was in a survival mode. You know, there are emotional handcuffs. There are psychological prisons that we can be in without bars.
There are mental bars that are stronger even than physical ones.
And that's what these two boys experienced.
41-year-old Michael Devlin, the alleged kidnapper of the two missing Missouri boys, remains in jail. Initially, Devlin had been charged with one count of kidnapping 13-year-old Ben Ownby. Yesterday, he was additionally charged with kidnapping and armed criminal action in the 2002 disappearance of Sean Hornbeck.
So we asked his attorney for a statement, and they just sent us a press release, part of which says that the facts of this case will be revealed at the appropriate time and place. Until then, they ask that Mr. Devlin's constitutional rights be respected, and they urge fair-minded individuals, they say, to renounce premature conclusions of guilt and refrain from any misrepresentation of the facts. So Michael, they say, Michael Devlin understands the gravity of these accusations against him. Together, they say, we desire to allow the judicial process to run its course. That is their statement. What needs to happen is the laws have to change. And this is one of the most perfect examples, as you were saying.
Should this man be guilty of what he's charged, this is a perfect example of a need for a one-strike law. Anyone who offends against a child, a woman, a man, kidnapping, sexual assault, they go away and they never see the light of day again. One strike, you're gone.
Yes, and not just one, and that should be uniform in every state.
Absolutely.
In every state. That's what I'm gonna work toward. I wanna just say that so many times we hear stories about the police officers, what police didn't do, what they should have done. And here's a great case of heroism coming from the gut. Well, I'd like Officers Chris Nelson and Gary Waxter from the Kirkwood Police Department there in Missouri to stand up one more time so we can just say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to the Ownby family, Sean Hornbeck, and to his family. Thank you. Thank you. Fantastic.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to The Oprah Winfrey Show, the podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. Rate and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Oprah Show, the podcast. And I thank you for listening.